First of all, let me introduce myself. My name is Marwa Osman. I come from Lebanon. I'm Lebanese. I am a university instructor at Lebanese International University and Ma'arif University as a media instructor. And I am a PhD candidate in management. My dissertation is about the intergenerational differences in the Lebanese workplace, how that affects the productivity, given that our employment is according to sectarian basics. So I am here to talk about the transformation of the axis of resistance at the Syrian crossroad, because I'm a political commentator and a political writer as well for a number of news websites. I'm also a mother of two. I'd like to say that at the beginning. I want to start talking about my paper, which was thankfully accepted as to be hopefully published, and my abstract was accepted, about the transformation of the axis of resistance at the Syrian crossroad. Now, the abstract of my paper has the following, which concludes what my paper is going to be about. The paper attempts to describe the announced and the disclosed positions of the axis of resistance stance with the government in Damascus during the overwhelming war on Syria since the insurgency of 2011. Now, I'll explain what the axis of resistance is. The axis of resistance is basically the resistance against the Israeli entity's occupation of Palestine. It is against the US and NATO imperialism and the imposing of capitalism on sovereign states in the Arab world, especially sovereign states that have been fighting the Zionist entity in our region. This paper also sheds light on the steadfastness of the axis in more recent developments in the region, with the liberation of large swaths of land that have been happening, specifically after the intervention of the Russian Air Force in the Syrian conflict, in the war on Syria, and from obviously the Takfiri groups in Aleppo, and the enclosing on Daesh or ISIS and other areas of Syria. Now, the content of this paper will be basically divided into two parts. The first part will cover the transformation of Syria's regional allies, mainly Hezbollah, and the Iranian Revolutionary Guard, known as the Axis of Resistance, from advisors to significant allied forces on the ground inside Syria. Now, because I don't have time a lot today, I'm going to focus on Hezbollah's role, basically because, first of all, they started first, and second of all, because I'm from South Lebanon and I'm proud of it. Second part is, covers the military effect of this transformation on the games against the various Takfiri groups. So basically, how this military involvement or military intervention alongside the Syrian government helped in gaining grounds and against the Takfiri groups and re-liberating areas, giving them back to the Syrian government. Now, the ultimate objective of the paper should be that it's going to discuss the evolving visions and the long-term plans of this axis, given that international negotiations obviously have failed to establish a path forward for ending this war in Syria. We were so happy more than 2 weeks ago that the Syrian Arab Army was retaking swaths of land back from ISIS, back from the Al-Qaeda-affiliated Nusra and Ahrar al-Sham brigades, and at that specific time when the Syrian government was gaining grounds, when the Astana talks were about to happen and have a breakthrough in political resolution inside of Syria, oops, chemical attack. I'm not going to go there. You can watch my videos to know what I think about that. But after that, we had the illegal U.S. airstrike on the Homs military base, the Shu'ayrat military base, which, by the way, I always like to emphasize on that. That base was the base where S-200 missiles were fired against the Israeli air forces that were working as the Al-Qaeda air forces inside of Syria by bombing, intentionally bombing Syrian Arab Army posts and their allies posts as well. Now, basically, let us learn about Hezbollah. I'm sure that a lot of you know what is Hezbollah, what kind of an organization it is, and I'm sure a lot of you also know what Hezbollah is as well. I'm here to talk about Hezbollah. Hezbollah is a Lebanese group. It was a group of southerners and a group of youth from the Biqa'i region in Lebanon. The Biqa'i region is closer to Syria. The southern part is on the northern part of occupied Palestine. We all know what happened. We all know the Civil War. We all know the invasion, starting the 1979 invasion of Israel up until it invaded and reached Beirut, the Lebanese capital. We all know the horrific acts. I'm not going to talk about that. I'm not going to talk about the war, but I'm going to talk about this group of young men, just the age of a lot of men that I see in this room today, that decided that, no, we're not going to take that. We're not going to just sit and watch our land be stolen. We're not going to sit and watch our families be killed and driven out of their lands. So basically, they started resisting. And at that time, resisting means if you don't have a gun, you resist with your stone. You don't have a stone, you resist with your shoe. We all have shoes. So that's how it began. I'm serious. That's how it began. After that, we had help from regional allies who became friends and now are companions. And now I am even compelled to say that we are even more than allies. We are more than brothers. We are humans facing the same destiny. If we fall, we will fall all. If we rise, we will rise all. What happened is we had allies from Iran to Iraq to Syria that helped us stand in the face of the Zionist entity's dream of expansion, and we fought back. These young men fought back, and they fought hard. They endured a lot of losses, and at the end, in the year 2000, we proudly liberated and retook our land and we revenged for all the martyrs that have fallen. 2006, it was not okay for the Zionist entity to keep the resistance growing. So they decided to wage a war against Lebanon. We all know what happened then. And later on came the 2011 insurgency or the war against Syria. Now, what happened after that? And what is the role of Hezbollah in all of this? And why would Hezbollah actually go inside of Syrian territory and fight for another state's government? That's a legitimate question. I'm here to answer that. First of all, the resistance axis, represented by Hezbollah in Lebanon, refused and opposed Western interests, specifically the US and Israeli / NATO interests. We all can talk for hours about the capitalist dreams, about the imperialism, about the global economy, globalization, whatever you want. Basically, there are actually three main reasons why Syria is in the war-torn state it is in right now, basically because they refused to comply to the U.S. Demands of becoming part of the global economy. They refused to use the U.S. currency, and they basically refused to give their backs to their axis of resistant friends, including in the global economy is the pipelines, the gas, and all that included in the global economy. But the third part was refusing to turn backs to the resistance of the axis of resistance. I tell you right now, right here, I'm not saying this for the first time. If you go back and listen to all our speeches from the leaders of the resistance, you could know. And from President Bashar Assad himself, if President Bashar Assad was given the option that he would become the next Nobel Peace Prize winner, if he turns his back to the resistance, if he stops the Iranian influence in the region, and if he stops the backing and the arming of Hezbollah as a resistance group. You can find that anywhere. I'm not making that up. After that, Syria, as I told you as well, it is essential for military supply, for the weaponry supply for Hezbollah and its fight against the Zionist entity. Now, Hezbollah's intervention in Syria, which began late 2012, beginning 2013, Hezbollah's intervention in Syria has been criticized by a lot of people, basically people who are maybe best friends with certain Gulf states and with certain imperial powers. It was criticized by many in the Arab world as a sign that they have abandoned resistance to fight fellow Muslims, bold Muslims, Italian Muslims, whatever you want to call them. I'm going to just negate that thing by saying one, giving one evidence, if you will. My evidence is that the number of Hezbollah commanders that were assassinated by the Israeli entity inside of Syria serves as a reminder that the movement has not shifted its focus away from Israel, but in fact, it is fighting Israeli proxy groups inside of Syria. Otherwise, explain why the Israeli occupying air force has launched airstrikes against Palmyra, for example, after the Syrian Arab Army and the Allies had liberated that land from ISIS, explain why they have been treating, helping, arming, and training Nusra, Al-Qaeda affiliate Nusra in the southern part of Syria, right on the borderline with occupied Palestine. Explain why they have been bombing certain roads and areas in Damascus, way up in Damascus, which does not inflict any sort of risk on the Israeli entity, which were shipments coming to both the resistance and the Syrian army, moving them from one part to another. So if that's not the case, then please prove me wrong. Explain to me. Now, these are the photos of some of the commanders that were assassinated inside of Syria. We all remember Samir al-Qundar, Amin al-Asra Samir al-Qundar. He is the head of the liberated, if you will, Amin al-Asra Muharrami, because he was liberated after the 2006 war. He spent 32 years behind Israeli bars because he was a resistance fighter. He was liberated after 2006. He was assassinated inside of Syria. Mustafa Badreddin, the long, famous, long-time famous Mustafa Badreddin, we all know about him. If you don't, I advise you to research this great man. He was also assassinated lately inside of Syria. And Jihad Mughniyeh, the son of Imad Mughniyeh, they both got assassinated inside of Syria. Imad Mughniyeh was assassinated in Damascus, and in 2015, Jihad, the son of Imad, was also assassinated in Qunaitra, which is bordering occupied Palestine. Why? Because he was basically included in training and passing knowledge on to the resistance groups, the Syrian resistance groups that were being formulated on that area, facing the Israeli army to be prepared for the liberation of the Golan Heights, which soon, inshallah, will happen. Now, why is Hezbollah fighting in Syria? I will also cover that, but why should I talk about it if the head of Hezbollah can talk about it better than me? Let's watch together.
نجي الخطر الثاني والتهديد الثاني الذي أيضا طالما تحدثنا عنه خلال الفترة الماضية الذي يهدد كل دول المنطقة مثل ما إسرائيل خطر وتهدد كل دول وحكومات شعوب المنطقة اليوم هذا الخطر يهدد كل دول وشعوب المنطقة وهو خطر الإرهاب التكفيري بصراحة شوفوا التكفير بحد ذاته لحاله ما بشكل كثير خطر يعني هلا واحد بيجي يقول لي أنت كافر يعني أنا ما طالب شهادة منه إنه يقول لي أنا كافر أو مؤمن. يكفر اللي بده إياه، هذا شأن، يعني إذا كان الأمر يبقى في الدائرة الفكرية القانونية، صفر. بالنهاية بالدنيا ما طالبين شهادة منه، ما حدا طالب شهادة من حدا، لأن إحنا ولا غيره يعني. وفي الآخرة مفتاح الجنة مش بإيده، ليفوت اللي بده إياه ويطلع اللي بده إياه، مفتاح الجنة معروف وين. المشكلة ليس في فقط في التكفير المشكلة أنهم عندما يكفرون لا يقبلون هذا الآخر الذي يختلف عقائديا أو فكريا أو مذهبيا معهم أو حتى سياسيا وإنما يذهبون مباشرة إلى الاستباحة ما في حل ثاني استباحة الدماء والأعراض والأموال إلى الإقصاء إلى الإلغاء إلى الشطب إلى الحذف وهذا الأمر بات معروفا لا يحتاج مني الآن إلى وقت وإلى استدلال ما يحتاج أنا شيء معروف بالبلد بكل المنطقة بات معروف هلا نحكي عن سياق كمان ببين الشواهد طبعا هذا الإرهاب التكفيري اليوم هو موجود في كل منطقة يتشكل من جماعات مسلحة موجودة في أغلب دول المنطقة بل يمكن في كل دول المنطقة هذا التيارات أو الجماعات تنتهج منهجا تكفيريا إقصائيا إلغائيا تستبيح في كل من عداها حتى وأنا الموضوع ليس موضوع سنة وغير سنة أو مسلمين ومسيحيين مسيحيين مفهوم حتى في الدائرة الإسلامية شيعة علويين دروز إسماعيلية زيدية كل من غير السنة محسوم عندما نأتي إلى السنة كل من عداهم كل من عداهم من السنة أيضا هو في دائرة التكفير وأسهل شيء عندهم يطلع يقول له أنت كافر مرتد طيب ألم تحكم قبل أسابيع داعش على جبهة النصرة داعش اللي هي وجبهة النصرة فكر واحد منهج واحد كانوا تنظيم واحد أمير واحد بيعة واحدة نفس واحد أخلاق واحد واحد تماما بكل شيء بالزع بالزي وبالشكل وبالمنطق وباللغة وبالأدبيات وبالعقل وبالقلب. لما اختلفوا بموضوع سياسي، ممكن يختلفوا على بيع النفط في سوريا، يمكن على اقتسام الغنائم، حكم عليهم بالكفر والارتداد بسهولة جدا يعني، وما يستتبع ذلك من أحكام. هذا الأمر اليوم صار واضح بكل منطقة.
Basically, what the leader of Hezbollah, the leader of the Islamic Resistance Hezbollah, saying that we decided to intervene in Syria because of these Takfiri groups. You might say that, what is it to him? Why would he go intervene in a war going on next door? Why would he do that? Well, that's why. This is one of the bomb sites that happened in Beirut. Not the stronghold of Hezbollah. It is called the Beirut suburbs. It has Shias, Sunnis, Christians, and Jews living in it. It's not a Shia stronghold as it is portrayed in the mainstream media. I live in Lahore. I know what I'm talking about. This is one of the major sites of explosions. As you may see, this had the fingerprint of ISIS and ISIS affiliates. This had been going on since 2012 all till the end of 2014. It started at the beginning of 2012, which is why Hezbollah cleaned the area around Beirut and larger Beirut and the borderline. They started working on the borderline before they went into Syria. Now, basically, before I start talking about how the Hezbollah military role shifted dramatically inside of Syria, now you know why Hezbollah entered. It needed to take the risk out because the risk was getting spilled in over into Lebanon. By the way, I hate the word spilled because it all started in Lebanon. If you have forgotten, I could remind you that in 2008 in Nahr el-Bared, we had more than, I think it's more than 100 martyrs for the Lebanese army and more than 1,000 injured fighting Al-Qaeda affiliates in the northern part of Lebanon, known as Al-Qaeda, which became known as Al-Nusra factions, who fled from that area after the Lebanese army took control of it. So it started there. So it's not a good terminology to say it spilled over. But at that point, Hezbollah decided that's it. We cannot just remain sitting there waiting for these people to come and kill us. So basically, what happened, what you just saw, just happened again and again and again in Syria, and sadly, it happened again 2 days ago.
Thank you.
part. This happened. This is Kfar-Yam Far.
Urwa and Kfar-Yam are two villages located on the outskirts of Idlib in North Syria, with a mostly Shia Muslim population. Since March 2015, 40,000 civilians have been under siege by Jabhat al-Nusra, Jaish al-Fatah, and other terrorist factions. The terrorists who deem Shia Muslims as heretics have vowed to wipe out and kill everyone in the two villages. Isolated villagers have been bravely defending themselves with little access to water, food, medicine, and electricity. The terrorists have carried out daily indiscriminate rocket attacks, killing hundreds of civilians, including women and children. Meanwhile, in the south of the country, the Syrian Arab Army, alongside Hezbollah forces, have seized a terrorist stronghold of Zawahiri. However, progress in Zabadani has been stalled as militant factions are using the two villages as a pawn, threatening a massacre in the two villages.
If you don't know,
we reached the Zabadani or Bawaya, but these people are going to pay a high price. The answer is what you see, not what you have grown. I'm addressing you, people of Fua.
About this in my paper, but I found it vital for us to see what happened because it just happened 2 days ago, and to show you that this was happening inside of Lebanon at the time after that was decision was made by the resistance group Hezbollah to go into Syria, first of all to clean the borderline with Syria, the Lebanese villages, and then to go forward into Lebanon, into Syrian land. What happened? In 2013, Hezbollah's military role in Syria shifted dramatically from a small advisory mission to a direct combat role involving a large number of fighters. Starting with Qusair, Hezbollah expanded its military, you can see the map of Qusair, they expanded their military presence, helped obviously by the Syrian government to regain traction in areas which had been lost to terrorist control. In fact, ground assaults in Qusair and Qalamun were essentially led by Hezbollah forces, while the Syrian Arab Army provided artillery and air cover for its senior partner. Moreover, Hezbollah also took the initiative to lead both Syrian fighters, Syrian army fighters, and Iranian forces at that time also came into Syria at the demand of the Syrian government to help. They initiated the lead for these forces in the triangle territory linking Daraa, Qunaitra, and the southwest of Damascus province. Now, in other areas such as parts of Damascus, east of Ghouta and Qassab, Hezbollah forces engaged in direct combat. We heard the doctor and also Ms. Amaran talk about Qassab. Hezbollah forces engaged in direct combat alongside the Syrian Arab Army, improving the latter's combat performances with their guerrilla tactics, which they gained in the 2006 war. Because as an army, you have a special systematic form of traditional fighting, whereas Hezbollah, it's not a state, it's not an army, so they have gained their guerrilla warfare because of the engagement with the Israeli entity. Now, in Homs, Aleppo, and the Golan Heights, Hezbollah deployed special operation forces to assist, train, advise, and organize Syrian regular forces and paramilitary MDF, which are the National Defense Forces. As I told you before, we saw the picture of the son of the commander, who was also a commander, Imad, Jihad, the son of Imad, who was killed in that area by the Israeli entity. Given the movement's combat experience in unconventional warfare and its training in urban warfare as well, Hezbollah Special Forces Unit has served as a significant force multiplier for the Syrian troops. Here, where in my paper, I'll be talking more about how they shifted their work on the ground, helping, pushing these groups, especially for the National Defense Forces. Now, my paper will also highlight Hezbollah's role in Syria, given Hezbollah's continued prioritization of its resistance activity while entangled in multiple military theaters across the region, because I started by saying that a lot of Arabs were saying, oh look, Hezbollah, Israel is no longer the enemy of Hezbollah, it's now fighting its Muslim brothers. So while entangled in multiple military theaters across the region, it indicates that it has transcended its original singular mission of resisting the Israeli entity, and confronting Israel is now one role among several others Hezbollah has assumed in its the post-uprising, so-called uprising regional political order, which has ushered in the rise of takfirism, jihadism, you can call it whatever you want, it's terrorism. Now, outgrowing its resistance role, Hezbollah now assumes responsibility for guarding Lebanon's borders, because we saw what happened. He went into the Bekaa region, the Baalbek, the Helmand region as well, and now part of the village that is up further than Assad in Assad as well, which is also half but partly still occupied by Al Qaeda terrorists. Now, it's a responsibility also for guarding Lebanon's borders, for facilitating homeland security and counterterrorism, as well as counterinsurgency operations in Syria and some even say in Iraq, despite the fact that we don't have still evidence about that, but maybe there was certain coordination and training. Now, the resistance is no longer confined to expelling Zionist occupiers and preventing Israeli aggression, but it is now intent on preserving the political territorial framework and the strategic environment that it requires for its continued operational integrity. Now, the destabilization of both spheres by the Takfiri jihadis has compelled Hezbollah to transform itself to a post-resistance movement. This post-resistance movement has been talked about a lot, especially by academics in Lebanon, and I advise you to read more for Dr. Amal Saad, who spoke about this extensively. Now, by saying the post-resistance movement, she doesn't mean, when she used that term, she didn't mean that it is the prefix post that denotes the end of the resistance, not at all. It should be understood that much the same way of the concept when we say post-colonial can be interpreted as the continuation of colonialism, although through different or new relationships concerning power. This is what we mean by saying the post-resistance movement. Now, the resistance by no means over has now morphed into a transnational, more than a transnational resistance army whose core identity and mission remain tied to its raison d'etre, its own purpose, the first purpose of resisting Israel, but which is also committed to protecting the resistance backbone. Where is the resistance backbone? Syria. So it's committed to its, to defend its resistance backbone, just as Sayyid Hassan Nasrallah said, we will hear a bit longer, he described it. This is how he described it. To that end, Hezbollah has sought to wrest Syrian and Lebanese territories from jihadist control. He has to do it, or else we will turn into an Aleppo, an Idlib, and possibly also a Farah and Kafraj. Just as the movement conventionalized its guerrilla warfare in 2006, before I go there, in essence, Hezbollah now is confronting a transnational insurgency that seeks to expand its so-called influence or proto-state or maybe its presence in the area. So by transnationalizing its resistance in turn, what do I mean when I say that? Just as the movement it took and it gained its guerrilla warfare in 2006 with its new, if you will, the hybrid resistance paradigm, which uses conventional and unconventional methods together. As I said, the SAA has conventional methods, Hezbollah has unconventional methods. They've used this. It has now created a new model of counterinsurgency in which its own irregular, hybridized resistance army seeks to suppress the insurgency or the insurgent activity of another hybridized, irregular force backed by US, by NATO, by allied Gulf states, and by Sultan Erdogan. Now, the war with ISIS and with Al-Qaeda-affiliated Nusra Front is viewed as an existential battle. It is an existential battle for this resistance group. It has an annihilative and uncompromising force that is hell-bent on eliminating all Shia. We have heard everyone talk today that they are calling Shias, that they are more infidels than Christians are or whatever. Everyone is an infidel for Wahhabis, but mainly they are focusing on Shia, which by extension is focusing on the resistance. The resistance against the Israeli entity. I emphasize that. Now, while Zakir al-Jolji is not politically delegitimized in the same way that Zionism is, there's a difference in there. Nor is right to exist as a religious doctrine question. Now, Takfiri militancy or jihadism is very much equated with Israel. Some people might be nodding their heads now, but let me tell you why. Hezbollah's discourse likens the danger posed by ISIS and Nusra to Israel. How is that possible, you might say? Well, in one speech, Sayyid Hassan Nasrallah invoked Israeli oppression as an analogy. It is an he put it in comparison to the potential loss of land, to the destruction of homes, to the capture of women, to the killing of children, to the humiliation. If I say all of these five things, what do you remember? I say ISIS. But go back before 2011 and I say these five words, what do you think of? More? I am heartbroken. Palestine. I think about Palestine. Qana, Mansouri were revenged. Who's going to revenge for Palestine? Who's going to get Palestine back to its people? Who's going to stop the annihilation? Who's going to stop the murder? Who's going to stop the killing of children, the capture of women? Do you hear about that anymore? Have you heard about that? In his Resistance and Liberation Day speech of 2014, the head of the resistance movement, Hezbollah, Sayyid Nasrallah, went beyond this analogy when he drew parallels between the mass migration of Jewish Zionist colonial settlers to Palestine, sponsored by colonial powers in the 20th century, and the mobilization and deployment of jihadists in the region, which he argued had been facilitated by modern-day imperialists. How on earth has Nusra got its hand on Tau missiles? How on earth did ISIS have accidentally get from the sky, it was dropped by the US Air Force and the US coalition, they keep saying, you can go and search for them, say, we accidentally dropped aid, aka weapons, to ISIS. Oh my God. How on earth did the US satellites, the US Air Force, not see the convoys of Toyota, the white Toyota that was crossing over from Syria, from Iraq into Syria, by the way, thank you, Japan. They were crossing over from Iraq into Syria. How on earth did they not see it? It was televised on Al Jazeera, but live. You want more than that. How on earth did they not see that? Well, they did, but they were just pretending not to see it. Jihadists are not just morally and politically equated with Israel, according to the interpretation presented by Hezbollah, but strategically linked as well. ISIS is portrayed as being the willing or unwitting servant of the U.S.-Israeli scheme to divide the region and foment strife, while Nusra, whose military and intelligence cooperation with Israel has now been well documented by the UN, by the Western mainstream media, and by the Zionist media itself. You can say I'm lying, we'll go and read what the Israelis are writing about. It's considered the jihadist incarnation of Israel's collaborationist South Lebanon Army. If you don't know it, it's called Jesh Lahat. It's the exact same thing that happened in South Lebanon before the liberation during the occupation of South Lebanon, when they helped Jesh Lahat to take control over it, and they called it, ironically, the South Lebanon Army. It is on the basis that Hezbollah does not view the US-led coalition's strike on ISIS targets in Syria and Iraq as anything more than, quote, a decloying operation designed to contain the organization rather than defeat it. Need I say more? Is there any proof for what I'm saying? Well, you could research it and see what happened in Mosul, what happened in Fallujah, Anbar province, what happened in Deir ez-Zor, what is happening in Raqqa, what happened in the Tabqa Dam. In the Tabqa Dam, the Syrian Arab army was blocked from taking control of the area and advancing towards Raqqa, where the ISIS stronghold is, to try and liberate it. Why? Because, oh no, no, we're going to liberate that. How are you going to do that? Well, we are going to bomb civilians. This is what's going on. If you don't know, read about it. Each strike that is being bombed, there are more than 100 civilians dying by each strike. Exactly like what happened in Mosul 4 weeks ago. In Mosul, U.S. targeted one building, supposedly that has ISIS on its roof, killing 245 civilians. 2 days later, the Pentagon said it were 4 civilians. Well, we had a count, we spoke with the families, we saw the funerals, it was not 4. Handing off how Israel is linked to these proxies inside of Syria, and why Israel is actually linked to NATO or the U.S., well, they are all connected, and the closest base for the U.S. in the region is Israel. It's practically the 51st state of the U.S. being funded. Thank you, Obama, $38 billion of U.S. tax money going to Israel before you leave office. But how and what are they linked exactly together with? Oh my God, where's the video? can I link it to my laptop?
أقول لهم إذا كنتم تعملون مباشرة عند الإسرائيلي ماشي الحال عرفناكم وسنعرفكم وفي دولة مطلوب تعترفكم وتخاصصكم وتقاضيكم وفي كل الأحوال أيدينا ستصل إليكم إذا الدولة أهملتكم أيدينا ستصل إليكم
After certain attempts, this was in 2018, attempts,
suicide bombs. كما تدعون عن الشعب السوري بدكم وضوح حتى من هيك وانه انتم عم تعاقبوا حزب الله انه هي وحده من الفرضيات والتحليلات انتم عم تعاقبوا حزب الله على تدخله في سوريا بدي اقول شغلتين الشغله الاولى انتم جماعات تكفيريه كعب السوري مش بس بموالي النظام حتى بمعارضي النظام أشد فتكا بالشعب السوري. أنتم رجال الدين المسيحيين اللي معاكم اللي بأيدوا المعارضة عم تخطفوهم وعم تقتلوهم. أنتم عم تفجروا مساجد. أنتم عم تقتلوا أطفال. أنتم عم تبعثوا سيارات مفخخة إلى المدن السورية دون حساب ودون كتاب. ألستم كذلك؟ أنتم الذين تدعون أنكم تدافعون عن الشعب السوري. أنتم الأشد والأكثر فتكا وقتلا بأبناء الشعب السوري. هذا واحد. اثنين، بالنسبة لنا كمان بشفافية ووضوح. نحن دخلنا في مكان ما أو أمكنة محددة وبحدود ما إلى القتال في سوريا. ولأول مرة شطيبة أحكي بهالوضوح الشديد هذا. نحن حيث نقاتل نقاتل بقيمنا وبضوابطنا. نحن لم نجهز على جريح. وأنتم تجهزون على الجرحى. نحن لم نقتل أسيراً وأنتم بتوقفوا الأسرى على الحيطان وقدام الكاميرات وبتعدموهم في وضح النهار. نحن لم نقتل المدنيين. نحن في بعض معاركنا من أجل تجنب المدنيين سقط لنا المزيد من الشهداء. وكل ما قيل خلال الأشهر الماضية ويقال عبر بعض الفضائيات العربية من أننا قصفنا وقتلنا وفعلنا وارتكبنا مجازر هي أكاذيب وافتراءات. أنتم لا تدافعون عن الشعب السوري ولكن إذا كنتم تظنون أنكم بقتلكم لنسائنا وبقتلكم لأطفالنا وبقتلكم لأبنائنا وبقتلكم وتدميركم لأحيائنا وفرانا ومدننا يمكن أن نتراجع عن رؤية أو بصيرة أو موقف اتخذناه أنتم مشتبهون أيها الحمقى اقرأوا تجربتنا خلال 30 عاما مع إسرائيل.
Basically, that is how I intend to conclude. What are the plans? What are the future plans of regarding the future plans of the axis of resistance, how it will end, despite the fact that I am a researcher, an academic, and a political commentator and writer about Syria. I first and foremost and proudly love Syria, and I will always say, long live Syria, united, undivided, and secular. And if you Google that, I just did this morning, I showed it to Maram, if you Google that, long live Syria, united, undivided, and secular, I accidentally found myself right next to chocolate cake, dude. And Miss Spice Girl Haley. So I end off with this.